A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
You know that feeling when you pick up a tool and it's just wrong? Not broken, not defective, but the way it asks you to use your body is fundamentally at odds with what you're trying to do. That's where Daniel's been living this week. He's in rural Connecticut, visiting his in-laws in a 1930s house, doing the kind of favor, cleaning you do when people have been generous to you. His father-in-law handed him a Craftsman mini shop vac, one of those little 1¼-gallon units, and his first reaction was, "This thing's weak." But then he looked closer. The motor's fine. The suction's fine. The actual problem was that every time he climbed a ladder to reach a cobweb, the vacuum wanted to tip over or fall off the rung. So he did something interesting. He looped it onto a tough-built tool belt, added a thigh strap so it wouldn't slap his leg, and suddenly the whole chore changed character. It went from drudgery to something surgical. His question for us is, what ergonomic equipment and accessories exist for people who want to take vacuuming from monotonous chore to precision work? And underneath that, there's a bigger claim he's making. That vacuum performance itself is a solved problem, and the real frontier is biomechanics and accessories. So today we're going to talk about why the motor stopped being the bottleneck years ago, why the 1¼-inch accessory form factor is the secret handshake of the vacuum world, and what happens when you apply EDC belt thinking to a shop vac.
The thing about vacuum performance being solved, Daniel's right, and I want to put some numbers on that because they're surprising. A commercial backpack vacuum like the Pro Team Super Coach Vac pulls about 100 to 120 inches of water lift and moves over 100 cubic feet per minute. That's the metric that actually matters. Water lift is how hard it pulls, CFM is how much air it moves. Those industrial units are designed to run 8-hour shifts in hotels and airports without overheating. Sealed motors, HEPA filtration, thermal protection that just keeps going. Now look at a $500 consumer vacuum. A Dyson, a Shark, beautifully engineered machines, but their motors are thermally limited. 15-20 minutes of sustained use and they start throttling back to protect themselves. They're optimized for noise, for aesthetics, for that satisfying cyclonic separation you can see through the clear bin, none of which helps you clean a ceiling corner on a ladder.
Actually has more in common with the industrial units in terms of duty cycle and suction consistency than a premium consumer stick vac does.
That Craftsman model, the CMX EVBE11798, 4.5-amp motor, 1¼-inch hose, weighs about 7.5 pounds. It's not going to win any suction contests against a Nilfisk Advance SC250, but it doesn't need to. For detail work, for the kind of precision cleaning Daniel's describing, 7.5 pounds with consistent suction is plenty. The bottleneck isn't the motor. It never was.
So, what's the bottleneck?
Two things, and they're connected. The first is the accessory form factor, the diameter of the hose and the tools that attach to it. The second is how you attach the whole system to your body. Let me take the form factor first, because this is where most people get lost. Consumer vacuums mostly use 1.5-inch or 2.5-inch hoses and tools. That's your standard floor head, your wide upholstery brush. The 1¼-inch form factor, that's the smaller diameter Daniel's Craftsman uses, that's actually the standard for a lot of commercial detail vacuums and central vac systems. And that means there's a whole aftermarket ecosystem of precision tools that simply don't exist in the larger sizes.
Give me an example. What can you attach to a 1¼-inch port that you can't get for a standard consumer vacuum?
MasterVac sells a kit specifically for this form factor. 12-inch rigid crevice tool for getting between couch cushions, a 24-inch flexible crevice tool that can snake around corners, and a soft brush attachment for delicate surfaces. Detail. King, which is an automotive detailing brand, makes a 1 1/4 inch soft bristle brush designed for dashboards, but it's perfect for window tracks, for keyboard crevices, for the kind of tight spaces where a standard vacuum head is just comically oversized. The thing is, most people don't know. This ecosystem exists because they've never had a reason to look. They buy a vacuum, it comes with 2 or 3 attachments, and they assume that's the universe. But if you have a 1 1/4 inch port, you've just unlocked a catalog of tools designed for professional detailers who clean cars for a living. These are people who need to get dust out of air vents and between seat rails. Their tools are surgical.
So the tooling is the real investment. A $30 set of precision attachments on a $50 shop vac could outperform an $800 mealy on certain tasks.
On detail tasks, absolutely. Not on broadloom carpet, the meal's going to win there because it has a powered brush head and the shop vac doesn't. But for cobwebs in corners, for cleaning car interiors, for getting dust out of the tracks of a sliding window, the shop vac with the right crevice tool wins every time. And that flips the consumer assumption completely on its head. We're trained to think the expensive machine is better at everything. It's not. The machine is a motor attached to a hose. The tool at the end of the hose is what actually does the work.
Which brings us to the body. Because even with the perfect crevice tool, you're still a person on a ladder trying not to fall off while holding a 7-pound canister that wants to tip over.
The biomechanics of vacuuming are awful. The standard stance, bent forward, one hand on the wand, one hand managing the hose, creates asymmetric loading on the lumbar spine. Sustained forward flexion of more than 20 degrees increases disc pressure by about 40%. That's from the Journal of Occupational Rehabilitation, and that's on flat ground. Add a ladder, and you're also dealing with balance, with reaching overhead, with the vacuum center of gravity shifting every time you move the hose. A backpack or belt-mounted vacuum shifts the load to your hips and core. Your hips are designed to carry weight, your lower back, not so much. The ProTeam backpack I mentioned weighs about 10 pounds and has a padded hip belt and shoulder straps. It's the industry standard for commercial cleaners who are on their feet for 8 hours, but that's a full harness system. Daniel's approach is different. He's using a tool belt, which is lighter, more modular, and doesn't make you sweat through your shirt the way a backpack harness does.
And the thigh strap, what's that actually doing?
It's solving a specific physics problem. When you mount a 7-pound canister on your belt, it becomes a pendulum. Every step you take, it swings. On flat ground, that's annoying. On a ladder, it's dangerous. The swing can throw off your balance at exactly the wrong moment. A thigh strap dampens the pendulum motion. It anchors the bottom of the canister to your leg, so the whole unit moves with you as one piece instead of swinging independently.
That's actually elegant. It's not just a hack. It's a genuine biomechanical solution to a real problem.
And it's the kind of thing that nobody sells as a product. There's no thigh strap for your shop vac on Amazon. Daniel figured it out because he's been thinking about EDC belts and load carriage, and he recognized that the same principles apply. The EDC community has spent years optimizing how to carry weight on a belt. Weight distribution, quick access, modular attachment. Tough Built's ClickTech system lets you snap pouches on and off without removing the belt. Occidental Leather makes belts with padded hip pads that can support 10 to 15 pounds comfortably for hours. These are tool belts designed for carpenters and electricians who carry serious weight all day. A 7-pound vacuum is nothing to that infrastructure.
So the paradigm shift is thinking of the vacuum as a tool rather than an appliance.
An appliance sits on the floor and you go to it. A tool lives on your body and you take it where the work is. The vacuum industry has spent decades optimizing for the appliance model. Quieter, prettier, more cyclonic stages, a bin you can empty without touching dust. None of that matters when you're on a ladder trying to reach the corner where the wall meets the ceiling. What matters is, can I carry it, can I reach with it, and does the tool at the end of the hose fit where I need it to go?
So if someone listening wants to build this kind of precision vacuum system, where do they start?
Start with the accessory form factor. 1 1/4 inch is the sweet spot because of that aftermarket ecosystem I mentioned. That means you're looking at a mini shop vac or a detail vac, not a full-size unit. The Craftsman Daniel used is a good example. The Vacmaster Beast is another similar size, similar port. You want something under 10 pounds with a top-mounted handle or some kind of carry point you can attach a carabiner or a clip to. Then you need a belt. A standard tool belt with a padded hip pad, Tough Built, Occidental, even a basic DeWalt rig will work. The key is that the belt needs to sit on your hips, not your waist, so the weight transfers to your skeleton rather than your soft tissue. For the mount, you've got options. Daniel used a Tough Built clip accessory. Those pouches are designed to hold tools, but a vacuum canister with a handle can be looped through or clipped on with a carabiner. Some people use a MOLLE-compatible pouch. The vacuum doesn't sit inside the pouch, you're not trying to fully enclose it, and I'll get to why in a minute, but the pouch gives you a mounting point.
Oh, wait. Why not enclose it?
Heat. Those little motors are air-cooled. They pull air through the motor housing to keep the windings from overheating. If you wrap the vacuum in a pouch or strap it tight against your body, you can choke the airflow. The motor overheats, the thermal protection kicks in, and suddenly you're standing on a ladder with a dead vacuum.
So the mounting system has to leave the vents exposed.
Has to. And that's actually a design challenge that nobody's solved commercially. The vacuum is designed to sit on a flat surface with airflow underneath. When you mount it on your hip, you're pressing the intake side against your body. You need some kind of standoff, a bracket that holds the vacuum an inch away from your hip so air can circulate.
What about a backpack conversion? Daniel mentioned thinking about a harness.
Backpack vacuums exist. The Pro Team I mentioned is the gold standard. But converting a shop vac to a backpack is trickier than it sounds. The center of gravity is different. A purpose-built backpack vacuum has the motor low and the hose connection positioned so it doesn't pull you off balance. A shop vac strapped to your back with bungee cords is going to shift around and the hose is going to tug from a weird angle. It's doable. People have done it, but the belt mount is actually more stable for a small unit because the weight stays low and close to your center of mass.
And the thigh strap completes the system.
The thigh strap is what makes the belt mount work on ladders and stairs. Without it, you've got that pendulum problem. With it, the vacuum becomes part of your leg. It moves when you move, stops when you stop. It's a 1-inch nylon strap with a quick-release buckle, costs about $8 at any outdoor store. That's the part that kills me. $8 of nylon webbing is the difference between a frustrating experience and a surgical one, and no manufacturer includes it.
This is the market gap, isn't it? The vacuum industry has been optimizing for the wrong metrics for decades.
Completely. They optimize for suction power, but suction power has been adequate for 20 years. They optimize for cyclonic separation, but that's a convenience feature, not a performance feature. They optimize for noise. But if you're cleaning an empty house, who cares? The actual unmet need is ergonomic integration. A vacuum that attaches to your body, accepts precision tools, and doesn't force you into a bent-over posture for 40 minutes. Nobody makes that.
The closest thing is the Pro Team backpack, but that's a full commercial harness designed for large-scale floor cleaning. It's not a precision tool.
Right, and it's 10 pounds and costs north of $400. It's a professional tool for professional cleaners. The DIY system Daniel's describing, a $50 shop vac, a $30 accessory kit, a tool belt you might already own, and an $8 thigh strap. That's under $100 total, and it does things no commercial product can do.
What kind of things?
Cleaning the top of a ceiling fan blade without a ladder because you can attach a flexible crevice tool and reach up from the floor. Getting cobwebs out of the corner where the crown molding meets the ceiling in a room with 14-foot ceilings. Vacuuming out the tracks of every window in the house without bending over once. Cleaning your car's interior without dragging a canister across the paint. These are all tasks where the standard consumer vacuum, even a very expensive one, is the wrong tool for the job.
Because the standard consumer vacuum assumes you're cleaning floors.
That's the whole thing. The entire consumer vacuum industry is built around the assumption that the primary task is cleaning horizontal surfaces, floors, rugs, carpets. Everything else is an afterthought. The attachments are throw-ins. The ergonomics are designed for pushing and pulling, not for reaching and climbing. Daniel's insight, and it's a good one, is that a huge amount of actual cleaning happens in three dimensions. Walls, ceilings, corners, furniture, cars. And for three-dimensional cleaning, the floor vacuum is the wrong tool.
So what's the ideal precision vacuum kit? If someone wants to build this from scratch?
1¼-inch mini shop vac, under 10 pounds, with a top carry handle. The Craftsman CMX EVBE 17598 is the reference model. The VacMaster Beast is comparable. You want a rigid crevice tool, 12 inches minimum, a flexible crevice tool for corners and weird angles, and a soft bristle brush for delicate surfaces. MasterVac and Detail. King both sell kits in the 1¼-inch size. Then a tool belt with a padded hip pad, Tough Built Clip Tech is good because you can snap accessories on and off without removing the belt, a carabiner or a small molly pouch to create the mounting point. A 1-inch nylon thigh strap with a quick-release buckle. Total cost, maybe $80 to $120 depending on what you already own. And here's the thing I keep coming back to. This system doesn't exist as a commercial product. There's no precision vacuum kit on the market. The components all exist separately. The vacuum, the accessories, the belt, the strap, but nobody has packaged them together. Nobody has even thought to.
Why not?
I think it's a market perception problem. Vacuums are appliances. Appliances sit on the floor. The idea of wearing a vacuum, not in a backpack, but on your belt like a tool, it doesn't fit the category. Marketing departments don't know how to sell it. Engineers don't get asked to design it. And the people who would want it, detailers, DIYers, people cleaning old houses with weird corners, they're a niche. A passionate niche, but a niche.
So the state of the art is a guy in Connecticut with a bungee cord and a thigh strap.
And that's impressive. But it shouldn't be the state of the art. The components are all commodity items. The engineering is straightforward. The biomechanics are well understood. The only thing missing is the will to package it.
You've been quiet back there, Hilbert.
12 inches of water lift is what that little craftsman pulls. Not 100. You said 100 to 120 for the commercial units. The craftsman's rated at about 50 inches on a good day. It's plenty for what Daniel's doing, but it's not in the same league.
You're right. I was comparing the industrial numbers to the consumer numbers, and I blurred the line. 50 inches of water lift is still more than adequate for detail work. The point stands, the motor isn't the bottleneck, but the number matters.
I had that same vacuum. The Craftsman. 2004, maybe 2005. I was working nights at a university dormitory in Ohio. They issued us these massive 15-gallon shop vacs on wheeled carts. You ever try to drag a wheeled cart up 3 flights of stairs at 2 in the morning? The wheels catch on every step. The hose pops off. It sounds like a jet engine in a concrete stairwell. I bought the little Craftsman with my own money, $63 at Sears. I carried it in a canvas tool bag over my shoulder. My supervisor told me it was against policy because the small units didn't have HEPA filters. I told him the big one didn't have a HEPA filter either. It just said filtration system on the side. He didn't like that.
Did the canvas bag work?
For about 3 weeks. Then I got ambitious and strapped it to a military surplus ammo pouch on my belt with a bungee cord. Worked great until the bungee snapped on the second floor landing. The vacuum went down the stairs, bounced twice, hit the wall at the bottom. The plastic housing cracked, but the motor still ran. Those things are tanks. The problem I ran into, and this is what nobody talks about, is heat. Those little motors are air-cooled. They pull air in through the bottom and push it out through the top vent. When you strap it tight against your hip, or worse, shove it in a canvas bag, you choke the airflow. I killed 2 of them that way. The thermal protection would kick in, and then eventually it just wouldn't start again. I learned to leave the top vent exposed, a 1-inch gap between the vacuum and my body. That's all I needed.
A standoff bracket.
A piece of 1/2-inch plywood with 2 holes drilled in it and a couple of zip ties. Cost me nothing. Solve the problem.
So the heat issue is real, but it's also trivially solvable.
It's solvable, if you know about it. Most people don't. They strap the thing on, it works for 20 minutes, then it shuts off, and they think the vacuum's broken. It's not broken. It's just not designed to be warm.
That's actually a really important design constraint. The vacuum is engineered to sit on a flat surface with airflow underneath. When you change the orientation, belt mount it, bag it, press it against your body, you're operating outside the design envelope. The motor's still good, the suction's still there, but the thermal management assumes a specific physical configuration.
The other thing I learned, the hose connection matters. On that Craftsman, the hose goes into the top. When it's on your belt, the hose sticks up and pulls to the side. Every time you reach, the hose torques the canister, and the canister torques your belt. After an hour, your hip is sore and the vacuum's tilted 45 degrees. I fixed it with a swivel elbow fitting from a pool vacuum. $3 at a hardware store. Let the hose rotate independently.
A swivel elbow. So you're basically building a gimbal mount for a shop vac.
I was cleaning dorm rooms. You figure things out.
The swivel elbow is interesting because it solves a problem Daniel didn't mention but probably encountered. The hose torque pulling the vacuum off angle on the belt.
That's exactly the kind of second-order problem that only shows up after you've been using the system for a while. The first hour, everything's fine. Hour two, the belt's shifted, the vacuum's at an angle, the hose is kinked, and you're fighting the equipment instead of using it.
The hose kink is what gets you. You don't notice it at first because the suction still works. But the motor's working harder to pull air through a restricted path, which means more heat, which means shorter runtime. It's all connected.
So the ideal belt mount system needs a standoff for airflow, a swivel for the hose, and a thigh strap for stability. Three small fixes that transform the experience.
None of them come in the box.
That's the thing that keeps striking me about this whole conversation. All the pieces exist. The vacuum exists. The precision tools exist. The belts exist. The straps exist. The swivel fittings exist. They're all commodity items. You could buy every single component at a hardware store or online for under $20 each. But nobody has put them together into a system. Nobody has even written the instructions.
The open question we want to leave you with is, why not? Is it a market perception problem? Vacuums are appliances, not tools, and nobody wants to wear an appliance? Or is there an engineering challenge we're not seeing? Heat dissipation at scale? Weight distribution across different body types? Liability, when someone falls off a ladder wearing a vacuum they bought from you?
I think it's mostly the perception problem, but the liability question is real. If Dyson sells a belt-mounted vacuum and someone straps it on wrong and falls off a ladder, that's a lawsuit. If a guy in Connecticut does it with bungee cords, that's his problem. The DIY approach sidesteps a whole layer of product liability that a major manufacturer can't ignore.
Which means the best precision vacuum system on the market right now is the one you build yourself. A $50 shop vac, $30 of accessories, and some creativity with a tool belt. Until a manufacturer steps up, the state of the art is a guy on a ladder with a thigh strap. The cutting room floor detail I can't stop thinking about. That MasterVac flexible crevice tool is 24 inches long and can bend around a 90-degree corner. You can clean the inside of a heating duct from the register without removing the grate. That's not vacuuming anymore. That's endoscopic surgery.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing and for the plywood standoff tip. That's going in my notes.
This has been my weird prompts. If you've got a tool hack that changed how you think about a chore, email the show@myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.